dramas of the court. The law awards and the law punishes.
Presenting True Life Jury Trial. Stories in fictionized form typical of the unfolding human dramas of the court. Tonight, the case of the antique dealer.
Scotland Yard.
1 moment, please. I'll connect you. Scotland Yard. Assistant Commissioner. Sorry, he's engaged at present.
Scotland Yard. Its grey, undistinguished exterior gives no hint of the brilliant anti-crime machine it houses, perhaps the most efficient in the world. Tucked away amongst its labyrinth of corridors is a frosted door inscribed Inspector J.D. Norris. Norris of the Halsney murder, the Green Park strangling, and a dozen other notorious cases. Inspector Norris, a typical example of the Yard's efficiency.
In film publicity, so I understand, the foregoing is what is technically known as a puff. Well, in case by now you've gained the impression that the Yard is a relentless agent of justice, unable to put a wrong foot forward, let me hasten to correct that impression by the following story. You've all heard the old saying, of course, about not being able to see the wood for the trees. And I must confess it applies as much to criminal investigation as it does to anything else. The Yard had sent me to investigate a case in a little town of Stradbury in Essex. This happened a couple of months ago. The trial's over now and the whole thing's been cleaned up, so I feel I'm free to speak. The call came through from the local police about 7 o'clock one night. As I happened to be on late duty, the chief assigned me to the job. I drove straight down to Stradbury, reaching there about 9 o'clock. The local sergeant, an officer named Kennington, was waiting for me at the station. You've had a little trouble here, I understand, Sergeant Kennington.
Yes, Inspector. Nasty business. William Taylor, proprietor of an antique shop on the High Street, has been murdered. I don't know whether I should have bothered you people at the Yard so soon, but, this sort of thing's a little out of my line. We're not used to murder in Stradbury.
No, I suppose not. Well, when did it happen? Where and how? Tell me all the details.
It was in a room at the back of his shop, sir. Apparently, round about 6 o'clock. I've left everything exactly as it was found. Suppose we go there and you can see for yourself. It's only a couple of hundred yards along the street.
Right, lead the way, Sergeant.
Well, what do you make of it, sir?
Well, it seems fairly obvious what happened. It was a fight, not a very prolonged one, no more than 3 or 4 blows, I should imagine, and Taylor fell. Back of his head struck this iron fire dog. It will ask, Mr. Porrock.
You think it's the injury at the base of the skull that killed him?
Well, one can't be positive until there's been an autopsy, of course, but it certainly looks that way. I noticed that old-fashioned safe over in the corner is open. Been able to check whether anything's missing from it?
Yes, sir. It seems it was Mr. Taylor's habit every evening to lock his day's takings away in the safe and to bank the money next morning. Today's takings have apparently disappeared.
Would the sum have been large?
Well, we've checked his docket, sir. He made one or two good sales during the day. I should say, round about £120.
I see. So it looks as though robbery was the motive here.
Certainly seems that way, sir.
Who discovered the body?
Mr. Richard Taylor, the dead man's brother, sir. He's in the next room now. I'll call him in and he can tell you about it himself, if you like.
Yes, Sergeant, do that, please.
Yes, sir. Mr. Taylor, would you come in here, please?
Of course.
Mr. Richard Taylor, Inspector Norris.
How do you do?
How do you do, Inspector?
I'm sorry to trouble you at a time like this, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, that's quite all right.
But there are a few questions I'm obliged to ask. I understand it was you who found your brother's body.
Yes, that's so.
Would you mind telling me about it?
I'm afraid there's very little to tell. I called into the shop about 6 o'clock to see my brother. It was closing time. The lights were off in the showroom and the front door was locked. I knew he was still in here because the door to the back room, this one we're in now, was ajar and there was a light on. So I opened the door.
You have a key?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Inspector, this shop is mine. My brother was at a loose end after the war. Always been interested in antiques and that sort of thing. So about 12 months ago, I financed this business for him. Since then, he's been managing it.
On what basis?
Salary and a share of the profit. Actually, he's been drawing about £15 a week from it. Myself, well, probably about 10.
I see. Well, go on, Mr. Taylor.
Well, just as I'd opened the door, a man came from the back room through the shop. He seemed in rather a hurry. Rushed past me and went out through the open door.
Did he say anything?
He did mumble something or other. Either excuse me or thank you. I wouldn't be sure which.
And then?
I came into this room and found my brother lying just as he is now.
What did you do, Mr. Taylor?
Actually, I rather fancy I behaved stupidly. I just sort of stood for a moment. I thought he was only unconscious. Then I knelt beside him and discovered he was dead.
Had he been dead long, do you think?
No more than a couple of minutes, I should say.
And then?
I suddenly realized it must have been the fellow who had passed me at the front door, so I rushed outside. There didn't seem to be any sign of him anyway. So I ran straight to the police station, told Sergeant Kennington what had happened, and that's about the whole story.
Did you get a good look at this man?
Unfortunately, no. As I said, the shop was in darkness. I actually saw him at the top of the hill.
You can't give us any description of him at all.
Well, only of the vaguest kind. I'd say he was youngish, thinly built, taller than average, and that's about all. Sorry, I can't be more helpful.
Would you recognize him again if you saw him?
I'm afraid not. His coat collar was turned up and he wore a hat. I didn't really see his face at all.
I understand about £120 is missing from your brother's safe.
Yes, something like that. I haven't checked the exact amount yet.
Would that be an average day's takings?
Oh, no. Very much above average. As a general rule, sales don't amount to more than £30 or £40.
Well, what made them so much bigger today?
According to the docket, my brother sold a Chippendale chair for £75.
To whom?
It doesn't say. It's just marked cash sale.
I'd like you to find the purchaser if you can, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything else I can tell you, Inspector?
Well, not just now, thanks. I may want to talk to you again in the morning.
Yes, of course. Well, I'll be at home. I have a place about a mile along the Chelmsford Road. Sergeant Kennington has it. Then, if you'll excuse me.
Of course. Good night, Mr. Taylor.
Good night.
Well, what now, sir?
Back to the station. I want to phone the yard. Leave everything here exactly as it is. I telephoned the chief, and he promised to send a police surgeon, fingerprint man, and a photographer first thing in the morning. Kennington detailed one of his men to find out who'd bought the Chippendale chair, and a couple more to see if they could trace a tall, slim, youngish man who might be the one Taylor had seen. By this time, it was nearly midnight, but there were a few things more I wanted to know before I called today.
Yes, sir. Taylors are well-known in these parts. They've lived in Stradbury for many years, and parents have been dead some time. There are just the two, there were just the two brothers.
I take it Richard is the elder of the two?
Yes, by 4 or 5 years.
Married?
No, neither of them, sir.
Well, as Richard financed his brother in the shop, I gather he must be fairly comfortably off.
I should say so, sir. He's very comfortable. His father had a good income from foreign investments. And as the elder son, most of it was left to Richard. Not that William ever wanted for anything, you understand. Richard's always been very good to him. Buying this business is just one instance.
They got on well together, eh?
Oh, extremely well, sir. All credit due to Richard, if I may say so.
Well, how's that?
Well, William was always a bit, not exactly a black sheep, you understand, but a bit unpredictable. He was sent down from Oxford for something or other and didn't seem able to settle down for a long time. He landed himself in several minor scrapes and Richard had to get him out of them. Then the war came and William joined the Air Force. Did very well, too. Twice decorated. He changed him a great deal.
In what way?
Well, he seemed much more adult and balanced when he came back, sir. He took a job in London for a while, and then Richard set him up in this shop. He was making quite a success of it, too, when this happened.
Was William quarrelsome? I mean, the kind of chap likely to make enemies?
Oh, not at all, sir. He drank a bit and got into bad company before the war, but that's all in the past.
Well, perhaps it's his past that's caught up with him.
What do you mean, sir?
Perhaps in his youth, William Taylor was guilty of some indiscretion. Perhaps one of his former companions has been trying to blackmail him. Perhaps he's refused to pay and there was a fight. Well, it's just a shot in the dark, of course, but it could be so, couldn't it?
I suppose it could, sir.
Well, it's a line that might be pursued anyhow. Suppose we sleep on it, eh? The team from Scotland Yard were on the job first thing next morning. The scientific section got to work in the methodical way we expect. The local sergeant was busy, too. Around about 11 o'clock, Kennington located the buyer of the Chippendale chair.
This is Mr. Easterbrook, Inspector. He offered to come round to the station to see you.
That's good of you, Mr. Easterbrook.
Not at all, Inspector. Only too happy to be of some small service. Terrible business. Frightful.
Well, it was you who bought the chair, I understand. Did you pay for it by check or in cash?
In cash.
At what time was this?
Let me see now. Yes, about 3 o'clock.
Were there any other customers in the shop at the time?
Not at first, but a couple of minutes before I left, young Rowan came in.
Rowan, well, who's he?
Would that be Lester Rowan, Mr. Easterbrook?
Yes. That's right, Lester Rowan.
Now, he's a groom at the Stradbury Arms.
Oh. Is he interested in antiques?
I hardly think so.
Would you describe him as youngish, slim, and tall?
Well, in general terms, yes.
Tell me, Mr. Easterbrook, was this man Rowan present when you paid the money for the chair?
Well, I don't really remember. He was still in the shop when I left, so I dare say he must have been.
Well, you'd better bring him in, Sergeant.
If you're thinking he might be the one, you'll need to change your mind, Inspector.
Well, why is that?
Because I was at the railway station yesterday afternoon, and I particularly remember seeing Rowan board the 5:15 train for London.
Hmm. You're quite sure, then?
Yes, sir.
Is it a fast or a slow?
Slow.
Well, where's the first station from here?
Southbridge.
That's the village I passed only about 2 miles from here, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, you mean he'd have had time to get off there, come back, and... Of course. Now we're really getting somewhere. I'll have a general alarm sent out at once.
Part two of the case of the antique dealer will begin in a moment. But first, your announcer. We resume the case of the antique dealer. So the general alarm was sent out for Lester Rowan, and I went round to the Stradbury Arms to talk to his employer.
True enough, Lester's a wild sort of lad. Has been ever since he come back from the war. Always getting himself into trouble, as you might say. Drinking and gambling and so forth. But there's no harm to him. No harm at all. A few fellas from Scotland Yard think he had anything to do with this Mr. Taylor business. You got another think coming.
We don't say he had. All we want to do is to have a quiet talk to him. He's gone to London, I understand. When do you expect him back?
I don't.
What do you mean?
He threw in his job yesterday afternoon, packed his things and left.
Had he previously given notice?
No, it was a kind of sudden decision, as you might put it. He had a bit of a barney and he up and left.
Do his people live in London?
Hasn't got any people, far as I know.
Well, what's his address there?
Didn't leave one.
Then you've no idea where he's to be found?
None at all, I'm sorry, sir. Yeah.
Would anyone here in Stradbury know?
You're welcome to ask the rest of the staff if you like, but I wouldn't think so.
Well, I'll try them anyhow. You might send them in, will you? It was a blue duck. The barman said he might have gone to Bermondsey. The housemaid guessed Olgert, and that was all. I checked at Southbridge. No one had seen him leave the train. I questioned Richard Taylor again.
As I told you before, Inspector, the shop was in darkness and I really didn't get a look at the fellow's face.
But it could have been Rowan, couldn't it?
Actually, I don't think so. You see, I know Rowan well by sight and I'm quite certain if it had been he, I'd have realized the fact. Now, this man was definitely a stranger.
Well, That was that. It was beginning to look as though Rowan had had nothing to do with it after all. And then Dr. Steele, the surgeon the yard had sent up, came into the station. I could see he'd found something.
Most extraordinary thing, Norris. Thought I'd better let you know at once.
What is it?
Well, Bannister and I have been studying a few of the blood spots we found under the microscope. Now, most of them are from A group, but a couple are from B. That means they belong to two different people.
Well, that bears out my theory. There was some kind of a fight. Taylor must have got in at least one blow before he was knocked down.
Exactly. But the point is, the couple of B group spots are malarial.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Kennington. Well, this might give us a lead, Doctor.
Yes, sir?
You said Rowan had been to the war.
That's right, sir.
Do you know where he saw service?
In Malaya, in the western desert, I understand.
Oh, Malaya, that's it. He's our man. We've got to find him, Kennington. We've simply got to. It was quite possible he'd never got as far as London at all, of course. That he was still in the Stradbury district. Anyway, I'd phoned the yard all details, and Kennington had called out all available police. And so we combed the place thoroughly. There was no sign of Rowan. Then, about 11 o'clock, just as I was ready to give it best for the day, there was a telephone call from London.
Is that Inspector Norris?
Yes. Well, who's speaking?
This is Sergeant Dawes, Metropolitan Division. We found your man.
Lester Rowan?
Yes.
Well, good. Where is he?
We've got him here in custody now.
Well, right. I'll drive straight back to London.
I'd save myself the trouble if I were you.
What do you mean?
Rowan left Stradbury by the 5:15 train last night.
I know that. He must have got off at...
He didn't get off anywhere.
Well, how do you know?
He got into a fight with someone on the train and was taken off at Liverpool Station under arrest. We've had him here in the cells ever since.
Well, why didn't you let me know before?
He gave us a false name. We've only just found out who he is.
Well, you're quite certain it is Rowan.
Yes, there's no doubt whatever.
And that he never left the train?
He couldn't. Wouldn't be possible. Looks as though you've been chasing the wrong man, Inspector.
Yes, it looks as though I have. Well, thank you. That's the sort of thing that happens in our line, of course. Now I was back where I'd started. Well, no, not quite. I still had the clue of the malaria blood, and that was very important indeed.
What's the program today, sir?
I want you to send men to every hospital and doctor within a radius of 10 miles of here. I want a complete list of every ex-serviceman in the district who's suffering or ever has suffered from malaria.
Very good, sir.
And I want it quickly, Kennington. It's now more than 36 hours since William Taylor was killed. Unless we lay our finger on the man who did it soon, he'll probably be out of the country and thousands of miles away before we even know who he is.
I'll see to it at once, sir.
The completed list came in that afternoon. It wasn't a big one. No more than 10 or 12 names. Half of them were able to cross off at once. Either they'd left the district or were still in hospital. 3 more had quite unshakable alibis. Only 2 had any trouble accounting for where they'd been at the time of Taylor's death. I arranged a lineup and asked Richard Taylor to attend.
The fellow I saw is not here, Inspector.
You're quite certain of that, Mr. Taylor?
Quite certain.
Well, I'm blessed if I know. Oh, you can let him go, Sergeant.
Very good, sir.
A couple more things I'd like to ask you about your brother, Mr. Taylor. Oh, this isn't very private here. Come inside, won't you?
Yes, yes, of course.
Sit down, won't you?
Yeah, thanks.
At the start of this inquiry, I formed a certain theory about your brother's death. It seemed unsupported by any facts, so I didn't pursue it. Well, now it seems as though I might have to.
What is this theory?
I understand that before the war, your brother was, well, shall we say, a little reckless.
I don't know about that. He was high-spirited, perhaps.
A little inclined to mix with company that was no better than it should be?
Yes, I think you could say that.
Well, it struck me that he might have been rather indiscreet at some time.
Over what?
Well, who can tell? Over a woman, perhaps. After all, most of us have done foolish things at one time or another. And it struck me further that perhaps someone he'd known in the old days knew of something he'd done that he wouldn't have wanted to be spread abroad now. In short, Mr. Taylor, I'm suggesting your brother might have been killed in an argument, following his refusal to pay blackmail.
I'm quite sure that's not right, Inspector.
You do admit the possibility, though, don't you?
Knowing my brother, all I can say is that he did a lot of foolish things in his young days, but never anything wrong. That is to say, nothing he could have possibly been blackmailed over.
Or perhaps there's something you don't know about.
Perhaps there is. But in that case, I can't very well help you, can I?
No, I suppose not.
Anyhow, I thought it was taken for granted that robbery was the motive.
I've never been convinced on that point.
But surely whoever killed my brother took the money from the safe.
Oh, yes, he took it all right. But whether that was his purpose in going there in the first place is a different matter entirely.
But what other purpose could he have had?
I don't know, Mr. Taylor. I don't know. Well, there it was. Stalemate. Stuck it out in Stradbury another week, hoping against hope something might turn up. It didn't. Back in London, the chief had a few terse and rather sarcastic things to say. The inquest was held and an open verdict returned. I went on to other work, but the Taylor case kept nagging at me. Those malarial spots of blood, they were the answer I knew. And yet I'd failed. And then out of the blue it happened one day. A phone call. Norris speaking.
Kennington here, sir. I thought you might like to know, Inspector. I called on Mr. Taylor today to sign his inquest statement, but he was too sick to see me.
Oh, well, there's no hurry, I suppose. What's the matter with him?
Well, it's a very strange thing, sir. I've just learned that years ago, old Mr. Taylor used to have investments in India, and every once in a while he used to go out and keep an eye on them, so to speak. When Richard Taylor was about 16... he went with his father on one trip for a holiday.
I suppose he did.
Don't you see, sir?
Kennington, you're not telling me that Taylor's down with malaria. Now, look, hold everything. I'll be in Stradbury in an hour and a half.
Oh, Inspector. Come in. I've been wondering when you'd get here.
You've been expecting me?
Yes. I knew you were bound to hear about my illness, and... well, it doesn't take much to put two and two together, does it?
So it was you?
Yes.
It's my duty to tell you that anything you may
say... that's all right, Inspector. I want to tell you the truth anyhow.
Well?
Well, there's very little to it, really. I went to the shop about 6 o'clock. The front door was locked and I let myself in, but there was no other man. You've guessed that, of course.
Go on.
My brother was just putting the day's takings in the safe. He seemed very disgruntled because he'd been stuck in the shop all day and I'd been playing golf. It's a petty thing to squabble about, but I'm afraid we did. He complained that he did all the work and I got all the profit. And that's not true, of course. He got a good salary and 33% of everything we cleared. He offered to buy out my share and pay me off gradually. I refused, and he flew into rage and called me a bloodsucker and a parasite and lots of other stupid names. And I'm afraid I lost my temper too. Then he hit me in the mouth and cut the inside of my lip so that it bled. I hit him back and he fell.
Yes.
He struck his head on an iron fire dog. Gave an odd sort of gasp and lay there with his eyes open and staring. Then I realized he was dead. I started to go for the doctor and then... well, I'm not a very heroic sort of fellow, you know, and I got panicky. So I concocted the story of seeing the strange man, took the money from the safe to make it look like robbery, and then went out and told Sergeant Kennington.
Well, that was very foolish of you, Mr.
Yes, yes, I know. I can see that now. I thought they'd say I'd murdered him.
But surely, when you got over your panic and you'd had time to realize...
I made up my mind half a dozen times to tell you the truth. If Rowan had been arrested, I would have. But the longer I left it, the harder it seemed to get. What'll they do to me, Inspector? I didn't mean to kill him. He was my brother. It was an accident. You must believe that.
What I believe doesn't matter, Mr. Taylor. It's for a jury to decide now. As it turned out, Taylor was never indicted for murder, but for manslaughter. The verdict was guilty with a recommendation to mercy. His sentence was 12 months. He's serving it now. But, well, you understand what I meant about not seeing the wood for the trees.
I'll return in a moment with further news of this series. But first, your announcer.
The court is adjourned.
The judge departs. The jury is discharged. The judgment has been given. Another human story is over until the law of the land is challenged again. And we are privileged to hear once more at this time, Dramas of the Court. This feature is a Grace Gibson radio production produced by Reg Johnston.